You're listening to Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX for the entire Central Coast. Local support for this broadcast is provided by Chaucer's Bookstore in Santa Barbara, hosting book signings from a wide variety of writers. A complete schedule is available at their website, chaucersbooks.com. Support is also provided by the Shumash Casino Resort in the Santa Ynez Valley. The Shumash Casino offers 24-hour gaming and a luxury hotel and spa. Information at shumashcasino.com. Issues and Ideas continues.
Good afternoon, this is Pandora Nash-Carter, and this is for Issues and Ideas, and I have in studio today Mike Bush, who is the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Pandora. I'm glad to be here.
Good. I should probably start by saying I'm a member of the Board of Directors. We'll get that out of the way right away, and so this is just a blatant time to have a conversation about the wonderful things that are happening out of the garden, not only long-term vision, short-term successes, and some concerts that are coming up. So let's start with kind of a question that really is interesting to me. We stole you from Singapore. You were working on a billion with a B dollar garden. They're called Gardens on the Bay, and San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden stole you away. How'd we do that?
Well, you are located in the happiest city in the world.
Well, yes,
in one of the best climates of the world.
Too, yes.
So, and I think that while the project in Singapore is absolutely fantastic, and we'll talk about that another time, and I think we'll see stuff in the local paper to some extent too, I think that the vision here with our botanical garden has been well thought out, and I think we're positioned to continue the vision and do big things. I was impressed by the people who support the garden when I was interviewing, and certainly when I had a chance to meet the staff and volunteers that cemented any thoughts that I had, but I felt I needed to interview as strongly as I could, and thinking that I was interviewing against, I guess if I was a football player, I would be interviewing against Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady.
Yeah, you were.
So I wanted to be sure that I gave it my best because my wife and I really did want to move here, and we've been here since May and love it here. We
Good.
Just spent 4 days at the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival and met a bunch of new people and got to be in some parts of the county we hadn't seen before. So it's a great place.
You know, botanical gardens to me are little bushes with labels that you can't quite tell if it belongs to the bush on the right or the bush on the right left, and you're not sure why you'd care anyway. So what is it that's special about the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden? What is it that's unique? What's the vision? Why should people care?
Well, botanical gardens themselves, by and large, are about educating. I've been in many parks, and nice parks, beautiful parks, that do have labeled plants and collections, but that's what they are. They're a static collection. Well, the collection may grow or not, but what botanical gardens do is try to really let people learn at a rate that's comfortable to them, whether that's walking through a tour or learning from things they see in the garden or taking a class or taking a series of classes. And that's what our botanical garden has chosen to do. And what we've chosen to celebrate here, because there are some 400,000 plant species in the world, while Kew Gardens in the UK and New York Botanical Garden and such may have grand aspirations for covering the botanical scope of the world, what the founders of this garden have chosen to do is to pick a very unique set of climatic circumstances that affect our daily life, because we do have a climate that is Mediterranean. With cool, wet winters. I read in the newspaper locally that December was the coldest month, coldest December in 40 years, and that we've had rain. And the rain we had just this past weekend has been glorious. We had 3 inches plus. It came down slowly enough where it soaked in, and so it's a great climate, a Mediterranean example. There are four other locations around the world that share that scheme. And by growing plants from those unique areas, which really only represent about 2%, 2.5% of the world's surface area, then we are already pre-adapted to having those plants grow well for us because they come from similar climatic regimes. That allows us to garden in a quite a sustainable way.
Well, we bring our English landscape mentality with us, lots of turf and requiring lots of water. And, of course, we live in an arid landscape, although sometimes we are in denial about that. And what I've been astounded with is the amount of color and texture you can get out of drought-tolerant Mediterranean beautiful plants. So people could actually have an English cottage garden theme, but have it with all Mediterranean-style plants. Maybe you should chat about that a little bit.
Well, I think so, too. And to me, the cottage style is more of a loose arrangement of perennials with small shrubs and occasional trees that make good borders, and things come in and out of bloom, and things grow on top of old things that have out of bloom. And it's something that has come to us from Great Britain. And certainly with the palette of plants that we can grow here, that same sort of thing can be done here with very little additional water. I do think that it is well worth repeating that we are in a dry western state. I grew up in Florida where there's 55 inches of rain a year. When I worked in Singapore, there was only 100 inches of rain a year. But still, that came in ways that were never more than 10 inches of rain in a month and never fewer than 6, although they called those dry months. Here we get 15 inches of rain a year when we have a year that's average, and that really hasn't been the case lately. We either seem to be rather wet or rather dry. This year, it's still too early to tell, I think. We're only about a third of the way there for our annual total. We had an inch in October, an inch in 1st of November, nothing until the other day when we had 3. So we're up to 5 inches now of the 15 we're supposed to get. So we're about a third of the way there.
In the preview garden, which is a small garden that people can see now, of the 150 acres that is available to eventually grow to, what can people expect when they come out, and then what are your current plans for that?
The preview garden was started by the original founders and team with great enthusiasm once they had received the lease from San Luis Obispo County Parks and started right away planting. And many of those plants have done so well under their volunteer tutelage that they've grown large, as the coast live oaks have, and are creating conditions that are totally dissimilar to what was there when they were started, shade. And while there are shade plants throughout the Mediterranean, they're in a definite minority. So what people can see there now is a garden that has been established and now is in transition between being a garden that has been somewhat shaded to one that's now opening up. I have been able, with your assistance and with other board members, to begin to gather a gang of additional plant design plant geeks that want to renew the preview, is what we're kind of saying, so that when we're done, it's really not the preview, but it's a new garden. I think that we can only preview something for so long before it's met its time.
Well, it's going to have some great wow factor in
yes.
it, too.
Yes.
I think one of the things that you do is that you give people, certainly myself included, the ability to see beyond the turf. I know we ripped out our turf a couple years ago and went all succulents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm astounded at how well it's growing and how little it takes to maintain it.
Right.
And how little water it takes.
Absolutely. I was reading an article today by one of our friendly nursery supporters, Gardens by Gabriel, and his article was about a lady who had done that. And in 2011, her garden has been in 3 years now, and in 2011, she did not irrigate.
Oh, that's impressive.
And took out her garden, took out her lawn, and put in a dry garden.
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time today, so let's talk about some of the things that are happening. Every month, there is Saturdays at the garden. Why don't you mm-hmm. tell us about the next one?
Saturday at the garden is coming up on the second Saturday of the month. On the 11th of February, they start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and this one is on common mushrooms for our area. That, I think, is by Dennis Sheridan, a local botanist and longtime natural history advocate. And people will be able to learn from his presentation and then take a tour through the garden where we'll be able, with this rain we've had this week, probably be able to see a good stands of mushrooms here and there on the 11th. Last month, on the second Saturday of January, we had over 60 people come on our Saturday. So our programs are getting out better, and people are realizing that for $5 for members or $10 for non-members, you can get a pretty thorough review of the subject at hand.
I'm always impressed with the kinds of things that the garden does to attract people, even non-plant people. I know you're coming up with some Valentine's Day cooking classes. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, we do try to keep plants involved with most things we do. And the one that's coming up before Valentine's Day is sinful Valentine's treats. And chocolate, of course, comes from a tropical plant. So I can certainly make that as a connection. And that will be taught in our kitchen by Brenda Hawk. And so if you need to come up with some really decadent chocolate for the holiday, you can take that. And then there's a family-style cooking that's done with Lindsay Collinsworth, our children's education coordinator. And she really brings children into the kitchen with their families or guardians, and they're going to brew up some plants that have been harvested from our children's garden. And that will be on the same day as the mushroom talk on the 11th, and that after at 1 o'clock. So oftentimes what parents do is they come, they listen to the presentation, and their kids go to the kids' garden.
One of the other things that you've just started recently is the Fire Safe Garden, where people can learn about what plants to grow around their houses to protect them a little better than they are currently. How far along is that project?
And that project was supported very nicely by the Slo County Fire Safe Council, also by the Miyosi Trust, and then most recently also by the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And that garden will go from near the pergola, where people may have remembered seeing the walkway that heads back towards the preview garden from our office complex. And it will be from that walkway to that ridge. So it's about almost 100 feet in elevation. And the idea with the Fire Safe Garden is that you plant the wettest, mushiest, most succulentest plants closest to the home that are plants that you could hardly make burn unless you got the temperatures very, very hot. And this idea has come about over time when wildfires have come into urban and suburban areas, and people began to notice that some of the best left places and properties, unhurt or not hurt so badly, were those that had a real mix of succulent plants close to the home. So our design being done by Owen Dell out of Santa Barbara really features a ring of succulent plants at its core, and then the plants become a little bit less succulent and a little bit more widely planted rather than being quite so close as you go further and further from the home or the structure you're trying to replace. And we've done the first major batch of grading. We have the structural plans for the ramada or pergola that will be in the very center part and give you the idea of the home that we're trying to protect.
And you have a new construction project coming up soon in partnership with the county.
Yes, the park facility fees are being used at the garden for a new garden that will basically complete the Oak Glen Pavilion and office complex that we have now. And while it's been complete and certainly dried in and very useful, the outside was not finished at that time, and the outside people gathering spaces will be completed. They will go from the temporary gravel and DG that we have now to having a paving system put in that is really a work of art. Emulates a coast live oak tree with its roots in our parking lot across the street. Its trunk spans the roadway, and its branches sort of embrace the entire facility as the walks go around. We'll be adding good people gathering places and lighting and a new amphitheater out in the rear of the building where we'll be able to hold perhaps 300 people.
For concerts?
Yes, for concerts and other types of events. I certainly could see plays being done there. I can certainly see other types of uses for an amphitheater. But yes, we certainly have had a very successful concert series and would like to use it for our concerts.
Well, I'm glad you talked about that because we're going to segue into our next guest, and I'd like you to stay if you would.
Well, thank you.
Our concert season this year is absolutely going to be fabulous. Our first concert is coming up on February the 12th. And we have the good fortune of having what Fingerstyle Guitar Magazine claimed as the guitarist of the year, and Acoustic Guitar Magazine said that he is one of the finest guitarists of our time. So I'm just really delighted to introduce in just a moment Lawrence Juber. It's been my good fortune to be able to put the concert series together again this year, and our first premier concert for this year is Lawrence Juber, who is English, extraordinarily well-known, incredibly talented man. He started playing guitar very young. I understand the urban legend is that the week that I Want to Hold Your Hand came out by the Beatles, he started to play the guitar. He bought a cheap acoustic guitar, and by the time he was 13, he was actually making money playing music. By 15, he was studying classical guitar, and he went on to become an extraordinarily successful studio musician, and I think he's best known by a lot of people, having been a Grammy-winning Wings guitarist for Paul McCartney. Lawrence, we want to welcome you today to KCBX and Issues and Ideas.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
We are so very excited about you coming to play at the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden on Sunday the 12th. I just took a look at your website. You have an incredibly busy tour season this year, don't you?
I do, actually. Most of it's not even up there yet. There's even more to come. But I'll be coming to you on the back of a nice week in the Caribbean. It'll be, you should have me nicely refreshed at that.
Well, I'm glad. A lot of people know you from Wings and may not know that you have 19 critically acclaimed solo albums. Can you talk about your music? Tell us what you do and why you do it and why it's so unique.
Well, I play guitar. And I play guitar because it's something that I fell in love with as soon as I picked one up, and I've never really been able to put it down. And over the years, I was in Wings, I have been a studio musician, and over the last 20 years, I've been a concert performer and a clinician, a recording artist. I just do a lot of diverse stuff, but it's all about making music on the guitar. And what I've really developed is the technique of being able to be completely self-sufficient, so that using what we call fingerstyle technique, which is really essentially it's like playing classical guitar but on steel strings. So the repertoire is not classical. I draw on the Beatles, the Great American Songbook. I have an extensive repertoire of original material that has become very well respected in the guitar community, and I can play all the parts. I play the melody, I play the bass, I play the rhythm, and it's all going on at the same time. And I keep people entertained that way. So that's kind of become my thing, as it were.
That's remarkable. I've read several articles about you that say it's almost unbelievable that it's only one guitar that's making all that music.
Well, that's what seems to impress people. I know the inside workings of it, and I teach guitar classes in many different levels. I mean, from elementary school up through college, I do a certain amount of outreach, and I can in a couple of moments explain how it works. But of course, the essence of it is that what I'm bringing to it is the best part of 50 years worth of musicality that I've been involved in music for so long. I orchestrate on the guitar, whether that's playing it in a with a kind of rock and roll consciousness, or approaching something like it were being a string quartet or a jazz big band. I have that kind of musical background that I can translate that into something guitaristic. And I think that's what keeps it entertaining for the audience, is that it's not repetitious. It's it covers a very broad range, and I find that my audiences are of every demographic, from youngsters through teenagers through through any age group, and there's stuff that I do that is appealing on every level. So that's really what's satisfying for me, is that I can entertain people with what I do.
Can you describe for our listeners today what they may hear if they come out to the Botanical Garden concert on the 12th?
Well, they're going to hear some Beatles songs, certainly, and a little bit of Wings, because that's part of my background. But also, I mean, I really enjoy playing tunes especially from the 1930s, you know, songs like All of Me or Stormy Weather. There's stuff like that will come into it. And some of my original tunes, which are, you know, some of them are kind of in the nature of tone poems. I have, for example, I have a tune called PCH, which, you know, was inspired by a drive down the coast. I have tunes that maybe have a little ragtime flavor or, you know, kind of more of a folky kind of quality. But then, you know, I'll also get into some Latin-flavored stuff. It's very diverse. It's eclectic. And it's not the kind of concert that sets one mood only and then just stays there. It kind of gives people something of a mix. And I think that's what engages the audience, is that they can't predict what's going to come up next.
Well, you have a heck of a following here already, because we're almost sold out, and it's still two and a half weeks away. So I guess if the people who are listening would like to come, we need to get them to get their tickets right away.
You get your tickets in quick. And that happens, typically that happens with my concerts, is that when the word gets out, the audiences start signing up. And, you know, I've been doing concerts in California now for longer than anywhere else. I mean, I travel the world with what I do, but the West Coast in particular, because I'm based in Los Angeles, that was kind of my initial stretch, was between L.A. and the Bay Area. And I've played a number of times at the Castoro Winery, for example. And that's always, you know, a nice opportunity to draw a crowd, and this will be my first time, actually, in some years in San Luis Obispo itself, and I'm looking forward to playing this venue. I think it'll be just a lot of fun.
Well, we're really looking forward to having you. We felt very lucky when you said yes. I have maybe an unusual question for you.
Okay.
You played with Wings until they disbanded. And once you're known for being the lead guitarist for a group like Wings and playing with Paul McCartney, how difficult is it afterwards to create your own solo identity? How did you go about doing that?
Well, what happened for me was that because I was already established as a studio musician and had a great depth of experience as that, when Wings folded, and officially Wings didn't break up, we folded. That was always Paul's intention, was that at the end of Wings it would be folding the Wings, as it were. And I moved to New York. And I got involved in doing some studio work in New York and various projects. And my wife, or the woman that became my wife, Hope, was from Los Angeles. And I met her in New York, moved out to L.A. We decided we were going to raise a family, and I didn't want to tour. So I basically kind of got reabsorbed into being a studio musician while my kids were young. And I've played on hundreds of TV shows, going back to even Happy Days. Home Improvement, Roseanne, Seventh Heaven, and then multiple movies, Dirty Dancing, Good Will Hunting, Pocahontas, most recently the Muppet movie. While I was doing that, I was also recreationally writing and arranging solo guitar pieces. And at one point, a friend of mine, a wonderful singer-songwriter named James Lee Stanley, had just started a record label and said, "You want to do a record for me?" And I said, "Sure." So I put out an album in 1990 called Solo Flight, and it was getting radio airplay. In fact, all around the country, including on your radio station. And that kind of opened the door for me to start doing some touring. And then I just kept making records. People said, "Do another one, do another one," and then it just kind of kept going. And so it's really been a kind of an arc of over the last 20 plus years of developing not only my own guitaristic sensibility with it and my own sound, but also my audience and people that have become familiar with what I do. And then that's kind of engaged also the Wings and the Beatle fans and beyond, too.
Paul, this is Mike Bush. I'm here with Pandora. I'm fortunate to be the director at the Garden, where you're going to be playing on the 12th. And I just was wondering, how did it strike you that you could play rhythm and bass to go along with your lead guitar, and why would you want to?
Basically because I love the self-sufficiency of it. And this goes back to when I was a young teenager, and there was a tune, an instrumental piece called Angie, not the Rolling Stones Angie, mm-hmm. but one written by a British guitarist named Davy Graham. And Paul Simon did it on one of the early Paul Simon albums. And what that involved was the ability to play a moving bass line and at the same time play an upper part. And to be able to accomplish that was a real rite of passage piece. And I was able to do that, and that kind of led me into an interest in classical guitar, in counterpoint. I'm still a big fan of just sitting down with a guitar and playing through hours and hours of Bach lute suites. And in college, I played Renaissance lute, and that is an instrument of great self-sufficiency, too. And I've just always been enamored of that. But to bring a jazz background and a rock and roll background into that, it just gave me a resource in terms of my own experience from playing with drummers and playing with bass players that it just led me into exploring that further, being able to play, for example, I Saw Her Standing There, the Beatles song, and be able to play the bass line and the melody at the same time, which becomes something of a tour de force in terms of performance skills, but is also such an iconic piece. And I like mm-hmm. to kind of combine those elements. Like I have an arrangement of Harold Arlen's Paper Moon that is almost like an old Les Paul recording, where Les would do multiple levels of guitar, rhythm guitar, bass guitar, lead guitar, but using multi-tracking techniques. And I do it as something of a tribute to him, but just doing it on the one guitar.
It's
so
amazing.
So sort it's, of a tribute
you know, for
to
me,
him.
It's part of what keeps it fascinating after being having a guitar in my hand for essentially 50 years.
I have to tell you, I've been a long-time beginning guitar student, and to be able to play all of those pieces and put them together, I mean, talk about walking and chewing gum at the same time. He's just cubed that to make it more difficult. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure that our listeners know that there are tickets left for your concert, which is Sunday, February the 12th at San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden at 4 p.m., and there will be a 2:30 free docent tour prior to that time. It is $15 for members and $20 for non-members. And if there are tickets left at the door, they are $25. We recommend highly that people jump on it right this minute and get tickets, because we will sell out very quickly.
And those tickets can be purchased online at
Perfect.
Our website, which is www.slobg.org, and that will lead you right where you can use PayPal and pay for the tickets right there, and become a member should you wish to take advantage and save $5 on your tickets.
The other thing you can do is call 541-1400, extension 301, and get tickets. But again, I suggest that you do it as soon as you possibly can. I have a quick question for you. I hope we have enough time to have you answer it, and that is Martin
sure.
Guitars has created a signature line with your name on it. How did that happen?
It happened because I originally in the 1980s, in the 70s, I was playing Martin and through into the 80s. And then at one point, I kind of drifted away because I needed a guitar that had a cutaway so I could access the upper frets. And I kind of went over to Taylor Guitars for a while, and I was playing their instruments. And then another company from Texas, Collings Guitars. But in that interim, I had become... I'd really learned that the orchestra model guitar, which was a very specific Martin model, was really the ideal instrument for my size of guitar and for the kind of music that I was playing. And I went to Martin and said, would you build me a custom shop guitar with these specifications? And so they did. an orchestra model with a cutaway, which they hadn't really made available as a catalog model. But I also based it on some of their vintage specifications from the 1930s.
That's just remarkable.
Dynamics, and so they said, "What a great guitar this is! Let's do it as a signature model."
Great. Well, congratulations.
And since then, we've done it a million times.
Well, yeah.
We've done it in different woods. We've done six or seven variations on it.
And that's the guitar you're going to be bringing to the garden?
I will be bringing a one version of that to the garden, yeah. Maybe two. I typically just travel with one, but in California sometimes two.
Well, Lawrence...
And you will be interested in this, because in the process of doing it, I've really become fascinated by the tonality of the different woods. So we've done mahogany, but we've also done various different rosewoods, and most recently we did one in Coa.
I'm going to have to jump on top of this. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Save that story for when you come. We're running out of time. Lawrence Juber.
Thanks,
coming
Lawrence.
To the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden on Sunday, February 12th. Get your tickets soon before we run out. Lawrence, thank you for joining us today. We can't wait
thank you, Pandora,
to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. This is Pandora Nash-Carner for Issues and Ideas. Thank you for joining us today.